Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I appreciate your listening and would love for you to know about tonight's esteemed guest, which is Judith and Jim of Fear of Being Fabulous. And I'm going to give you their websites right now so that you can log on and see what they are up to while we're talking. That would be www.judithandjim, that's J-U-D-I-T-H-A-N-D, J-I-M.com, and that's their main website. And their other website is www.fearofbeingfabulous.com. That's all spelled out, no spaces. And that's F-E-A-R-O-F-B-E-I-N-G-F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S.com. So go ahead and log on to one or both and switch back and forth and enjoy finding out all of the wonderful things we're about to talk about on the show tonight, which has a lot to do with the fear of being fabulous and how it affects and paralyzes people in their personal lives and their careers. So I'm going to read just a little bit of a bio for you about Judith and Jim and give you a good thumbnail as to the treat you're about to experience. Judith and Jim, husband and wife psychology team, Judith Shervin, Ph.D., and Jim Snikowski, Ph.D., are the best-selling authors of four books, which are all still in print, including their third, Be Loved for Who You Really Are. As guest experts, they have appeared on over 1,100 television and talk radio shows, including Oprah, The O'Reilly Factor, The View, 48 Hours, The Daily Buzz, Canada AM, MSNBC, and CNN. They have been interviewed for and published by hundreds of newspapers and magazines, including the Los Angeles Times, USA Today, Chicago Tribune, Boston Globe, and they are columnists for Today's Black Woman. They were both involved in theater and film earlier in their lives. Judith as an actress, Jim as an actor, director, and teacher. Now as trainers and motivational speakers, they have been working with live audiences for the past 19 years, nationally and internationally. They understand the challenges that men and women face when they suffer from the fear of being fabulous in their careers, love life, you name it. And Judith and Jim will reveal the deep unconscious secret that throws open the doors to satisfaction and success. Ooh, I can't wait. More than their extensive professional background, Judith and Jim bring profound personal experience and knowledge to their work. They have had to overcome the fear of being fabulous big time, and they've been married for 18 years, triumphing in their success together, so they bring hope for almost everyone. And I'm Kate Romero, your host, and I want to thank BBSRadio.com for bringing this all about, making this possible, and introduce to you now the esteemed Judith and Jim. Hello, Judith and Jim.
Hi, Kate.
Welcome,
Hi.
Welcome. Thank you for
really,
joining us.
We have been anticipating this call and looking forward to being with you.
I'm so glad, and I feel exactly the same way. I think I've even told, you know, the bugs up in the trees, I've told everybody about this show tonight that they absolutely must listen to get some of your combined wisdom, which I believe you're both channeling all the time. I don't think that there's ever a second goes by that you're not in your highest, best wisdom. Is that pretty accurate?
I would say, other than when once in a while we fall into being pressured like crazy for some deadline or something.
Right.
Then, yes, most of the time, both of us feel like there's this more stuff, good stuff, wonderful, inspirational stuff coming right through us all the time. We could be producing new books and new teleseminars and new products all the time because, one, we've had the experience ourselves of having to break free of the fear of being fabulous, and two, we see how it changes people's lives when they really get a hold of this information.
But, Kate, I want to make a point here so that everybody is listening, and that is, Everything that Judith said is actually true and perfectly accurate, and there are times when we are in the pit, and that's part of the reality here. So that what we want people who are listening to know is that we're not setting ourselves up like we're sitting on some pedestal. There may be moments when all of us sit on that pedestal, and then the moments we come crashing down.
Right.
What Judith and I have had to focus on is how to get out of the crash down to stay on the pedestal more of the time than not.
Right. Right. And, you know, I would just imagine, Judith and Jim, that, you know, when you either take turns or hit the pit, crash, and, you know, whatever that is where you forget who you are, go unconscious for a minute,
right.
Being that you both have this wonderful, loving, supportive relationship, I'm guessing that you're a regular tag team to help pull the other one, you know, back up again to that place of higher frequency to get back on track. Is that accurate?
Right. We work as a team in that way. It's
yes.
also part of the core of our marriage. And when we work with couples and counsel couples, we help them understand that one of the deep purposes for marriage, for a committed relationship, whether it's marriage or not, it doesn't matter, is to be living support for each other, to be compassionate, and to also remember to show a guiding light out of those pits that any of us can get into. And certainly when Jim and I were first together, long before we were even engaged, we had made an agreement that we were joined together to help each other surpass the families we'd been born into and the negativity that we'd been raised with, and that has been one of the spiritual cores of our marriage.
And how delicious that must be for you. I mean, that is the ideal thing. For me, the way, and I'm a life coach and a career coach, and I believe that personal and professional are very, very related, being that life is holographic and what happens in one happens in the other. For me, relationships aren't here to make us happy so much as they're here to get us conscious, and getting conscious will cause the happiness. Happiness is a byproduct of that, and that's including our relationship with money, people, significant other, family, friends, you name it, and mainly our relationship with ourselves. Would you agree with that?
Completely.
Right.
You don't shoot for happiness.
Right.
It's like in lovemaking. You don't shoot for the climax. You are a lover through the whole process, and the climax is just one moment of it. If that's what you're aiming for, your lovemaking is going to fall flat because it's going to be so forced and so pressured that it will never, ever, ever match the expectations that you have of it if you don't pay attention to the moments along the road.
Exactly, and you just gave me the most wonderful insight. Being a talent manager and working with my wonderful, amazing, incredible talents every day. My clients are some of the most gifted people I've ever had the privilege to know. Would it be fair to say that when they're preparing for an audition and actually performing their audition or their booking, whatever it is they're doing creatively, that it would, if they would use the metaphor of making love, and it's not about the climax, it's about the journey, it's about being of service, it's about giving to one another, it's about being attentive and supportive. Do you think that would be a good analogy for actors to think of it in that way?
The only thing I wouldn't change, I would add, is when you pay attention to what's happening in the moment, so that you are actually living fully in the moment, you are doing the best acting job you can do. If you're out there wondering about what's at the end of the scene, or whether the other person's going to go up on their lines, or whether or not you're going to forget your lines, you're out of the moment, and you're not acting, you're pretending, and then you can be easily spotted as a pretender, and then you're not a good actor.
Right, so acting is just basically being present.
Being present in the moment,
yes.
And actually responding to the other person, even if the other person, as we all know, may not be doing the same thing. The other person may be off to out to lunch somewhere, but you must remain alive in the moment for your performance to become vivid and compelling and engaged with the audience.
Well, not only that, Jim, that's a very good point that you make, but not only that, when you are being your authentic true self and, you know, speaking your honesty through the writing of somebody else, you're actually helping your partner to get back engaged with the scene. The more realistic and authentic you are, the more you pull them back in.
Right.
Right. Right. The more you compel them to enter their own center and be there with you, the more you're putting on a performance, which unfortunately all too many acting teachers even still do, you are pretending to be in character, and then you are throwing the whole scene off and certainly not helping your partner.
Right. So acting is being truthful and not pretending.
Precisely. When I was a young actor, years ago, I was a repertory theater actor for 15 years, and then I spent a few years in Hollywood, and I did very well in Hollywood, but I did not work in Hollywood, which has to do with the fear of being fabulous, which I'll get to in a few minutes. But the point is that when I was a young actor, and I was so busy being concerned about whether or not the other actors were doing it right, I was not only indicating, I was not only not performing well, but I was arrogant and terribly frightened because I was so other-directed that my whole consciousness was out there instead of living and being alive in my own moment.
Right.
And as a result, I would be the one who would feel terrible at the end of it. They didn't feel terrible because they weren't doing the same thing, and I'm the one who came off looking bad.
Right.
Did I cut you off?
No.
Okay. Another clue here that's really important for talent when they're going to go to an audition or they're booked and they're going to be on stage or filming is that all too often the focus is on what do the other people think? What does the director think? What does the producer think? What does the casting agent think? On and on and on. And then they have left themselves and they don't have access to the true vehicle when they can focus on the excitement, the thrill of entering into the character. Even if it's a cold reading, if they can stay focused on their own enthusiasm for their character, they will do the best job they can. But the minute they leave that internal world and start looking out there and thinking, what are they thinking, they're in trouble.
Right. Right. And the moment you become self-conscious, you're pretty much dead in the water.
Self-consciousness is a really interesting term that I think this could, the term self-conscious could warrant an entire show and an entire
podcast. Yes.
Because when I was a young actor, I used to think that if I had any moments on stage where I was aware of what I was doing, I was somehow being self-conscious. And so I really strove to sort of be so completely unaware of myself that I was totally in the character. But unfortunately, if I had succeeded, that would have been psychotic because I am never not there. Self-consciousness isn't, if you're not aware of what's happening and what's going on around you, then you are out, you're out of consciousness. But self-consciousness is when you start watching yourself and judging yourself and commenting on yourself, then again, you're out of the scene and you're in some fantasy scene in your own head.
Right, exactly. And for everyone in the entertainment industry, what would you recommend the artist, or no matter what position they have in the entertainment industry, in a phrase or two, what would you say to them as to how to stop thinking so much of themselves and that goal that serves the feeding of, the animal inside that needs that fix and that drive? What would you say to the actors and others in the entertainment industry on how to have a consciousness shift around the work they're doing as artists to be of service rather than ask for something? They're there to give something. Does that make sense?
Yes. And what I would say is that the task is in the work. The success is in the work. You will never succeed on stage or in film or anywhere, for that matter, if what you're doing is concerned and focused on the outcome of the work. The task is in the work. And when you are alive in the work, you are vibrant and alive because the work is structured and because the work is written by a playwright or a screenwriter. It is already heightened in its intensity so that you will become so vibrantly alive when you stay focused on the work that the audience will be compelled. When you don't, you are actually never going to succeed in any way that's meaningful.
And I would add that all too often people get involved in the theater from a position of insecurity and a position of the fear of being fabulous, and their hope is that they can be redeemed by achieving some level of stardom and having the outside world acclaim them, which we know is a bottomless pit. When we look at stars like Nicole Kidman, who a magazine article revealed that during every shoot she has a meltdown and feels inadequate and feels like she can't finish the film.
Right.
Robert Downey Jr. that has struggled mightily with his drug problem.
And Kim Basinger, same thing.
Same thing. Mel Gibson, who gets drunk at the height of his career, he's drunk and having a huge anti-Semitic fit at the police. We could go on and on.
That is a wonderful example of the fear of being fabulous.
Totally. Totally.
Astoundingly profound.
Because here's what the fear of being fabulous is. What we say when we say the fear of being fabulous, you have to look at it this way. When we are growing up, and it starts in childhood, but it continues throughout your life, when we are growing up, we make decisions about life, about the environment, about God, about ourselves, and those decisions are often made without rational consideration. So they're emotional decisions, and then they get buried in the unconscious. I'll give you an example from my own life to make it clear.
Mm-hmm.
My father used to say to me over and over again, when I was a little kid, he would put three fingers on his left forearm, his left upper arm, and he would say to me, "I have three stripes and you have two, don't you ever forget it." Which meant that he was the sergeant, I was the lesser of rank, and I was to never forget that.
And would that mean, Jim, if I may interject this,
sure,
that you were not allowed to be more successful than he ever was, and
absolutely,
if you were, that made you feel betrayed?
Absolutely. And you just said it, if I understood you correctly, if I had become more of a higher rank than him,
yes,
after I had made this agreement with him, because first of all, as a child, I revered him, and I didn't have the discretionary power to say, wait a minute, that's really crazy what you're telling me. You want me to be limited for the rest of my life. I didn't have all of that reasoning to be able to argue back, so I just unconsciously and emotionally said, okay, you're the sergeant, I'm the corporal. You're the higher rank, I'm the lower rank.
Right.
Then I go to high school and college and barely get through, and people look at me as though I am failing. But the fact of the matter is, I am not failing. I am succeeding at the agreement I made with him years before, so that when fabulousness presents itself to us, when stardom, for example, presents itself, or world acclaim presents itself, it is working against those unconscious convictions that we've made that say you cannot go there, because if you go there, you are betraying the agreement you made early on to whomever you made it, in my case, my father. So let me give you just a story on that. When I was in L.A., I got to L.A., and I had 12 jobs in my first 18 months in Los Angeles, and a number of them were acting jobs, and a number of them were co-star jobs.
Uh-huh.
And when I finally got my first pilot, this was many years, it was in the late 70s, I got my first pilot, and my agent took me to what was then the Brown Derby to sign the contract.
Uh-huh.
What a wonderful theatrical Hollywood moment.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the Brown Derby to sign your first major contract. I couldn't wait to get out of the Brown Derby. I hated being in the Brown Derby. I didn't understand why, but I couldn't stand being in the Brown Derby. I felt so uncomfortable. It was like we should have gone and signed the contract at McDonald's.
Uh-huh.
The reason was that when I had the opportunity to really advance my life, the contract in the Brown Derby being symbolic of that, I was unable to overcome that unconscious agreement that said you will never be more than your father. And so actually, that's the fundamental reason why I am not an actor in Hollywood today. I brought that whole career down because I was unable to move past that conviction. So I was terrified of being fabulous because I didn't want to betray my father.
You know, I really appreciate that. And I have, my story is a little, well, if you took a look at me, you'd be shocked about this, because I don't look like somebody who would do this. But I'll just tell you how that affected me in my life, if I may. I have a world title in arm wrestling.
Wow.
I'm 5'6" and 124 pounds. But see, my approach was, I absolutely love it when people underestimate me.
Uh-huh.
Because that gives me an edge. Because
right,
if they're underestimating me, then I'm going to get them while they're thinking I'm just, you know, there for the comic relief.
Right.
So my first arm wrestling tournament, actually it was my third one, and it was for the world title. And oftentimes the referee would be the husband or wife of the opponent, and I would arm wrestle men and women.
Wow.
Yep. And so this one particular arm wrestling match, it was for the platinum belt buckle, it was for the trophy, it was for the cash, it was for everything. I really didn't care about all that stuff. What I cared about was living up to my potential.
Uh-huh.
And I was raised on a farm in Kentucky, so I was very, very strong, like freakishly strong, like what's her name, Courtney Cox on Friends.
Uh-huh.
And so I just knew that I had the stealth strength to me. And I believe it mostly came from the biggest muscle that we have, which is between our ears. And it was just a matter of being tenacious. So I got to the point where we were just about to do the final round. And this woman was huge. And she looked like, excuse the expression, but a school bus with lipstick. And she was really, really ferocious. And she had people slapping her face and calling her names and berating her so that she would really be in the mood to annihilate me.
Oh.
Well, that was killing an ant with a sledgehammer. She didn't need to do that, but that was her customary thing to do. So I'm there arm wrestling, and none of that intimidated me. But what got to me as I'm pulling her hand down to the table and just about a quarter of an inch from winning, I saw what was going on. All of a sudden, I heard in my head my mother saying to me, "You will never add up to anything. You'll never amount to anything. You'll never be number one. And you'll never have anything." And I yanked my hand out of this woman's hand, and I said, "I can't do it." And the referee was her husband, and he said, "What do you mean you can't do it? You had her." I said, "I can't do it. I just can't do it." He said, "Well, what do you mean you had her? You were winning. Why did you pull your hand away?"
Right.
He was furious. And this was his wife, and
right.
He still wanted me to win. And I said, "I'll tell you." My mother's voice was in my head telling me that I can't do it, that I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed to be number one at anything. And he said, "You know what? Your mother's not here, and her voice doesn't need to be in your head, and I'm going to give you another chance.
Oh.
And I want you to beat my wife."
Wow.
And I said, "Are you sure she's your wife?" He goes, "That's why I want you to win. If you don't, then there's no honor in that." So he counted us in again. And he said, "Go," and I beat her so fast, I didn't even see my arm go down. And that was such a wonderful accomplishment and such a breakthrough to break that cycle in my life way back about 20 years ago this happened. And, I mean, I've been so much more free ever since in understanding and being compassionate towards other people who are also having the fear of being fabulous.
Exactly.
And I've really grown just so much in having chosen to be an actor because it challenged me to really, really work on my relationship with myself.
And Kate, if that angel had not been there saying, "Do it again," and you walked away, you would never had the championship. Like, I never got beyond the Brown Derby.
Yeah.
I never got beyond the Brown Derby because there was nobody there. I am a very bright, very intelligent guy. So the rationalizations that I was able to concoct to convince myself that I was right for not being in the Brown Derby succeeded. And today I am not doing that, although sometimes I still look back at it and think, "Oh, my God, what would have been?" Because I was working all the time. I was not brought to Los Angeles. Nobody asked me to come. I walked in off the street, and I started working. I had a career going, and I could not make it happen.
Wonderful, wonderful. But you know what, too, Jim and Judith, the fact is that you guys walked away from Hollywood out of a fear of being fabulous so that you could then go and find out why you had a fear of being fabulous and help others understand that within themselves. So from where I'm sitting, it was all perfect, and you're doing much, much more for our planet and everyone in it doing what you're doing now than I'm sure you were very gifted and talented, the both of you, but I'm sure that you're making a much bigger difference doing what you're doing and just the way you're doing it now.
Well, Kate, thank you, and we believe that as well as we have progressed in all of the work that we do, and I just want to... I just feel really warmed by that wonderful man who was your angel and gave you that second opportunity and really helped you see that you didn't have to stay trapped in your mother's voice. And what we see so often is that people have these deep unconscious loyalties to how they were raised. And we're not blaming parents. For everyone listening, we want to be really clear here. This is not an issue of blame.
Yes, and when I mentioned about my mother, she had seven kids and raised us by herself and, you know, a lot of wild Indians. So, you know, she said things she didn't mean.
Well, and she also was not trained in how to be, a better parent.
Yes.
Only recently have we had any kind of parent training in our culture. So we have to be very compassionate and very understanding that parents have been doing the best they knew how.
Yes.
The challenge for all of us is to recognize when we're entrapped behind those old adages that we were given and teachings that taught us to be negative about ourselves or filled with self-doubt, whatever it might be, or simply loving our parents to death, truly loving them so much that we will make sure we will die metaphorically in our own lives to make sure they are superior, that they have the better life, the better marriage, more money, whatever it might be. It's all, we call it the love grip. Because so often when we work with people, we see the deep, deep pain of betraying our parents and moving on. So there are a lot of issues, and we certainly can't cover them all tonight.
Right, right. And before we move too far past the arm wrestling match, I just want to share also that when I beat this woman, she threw her arms around me and cried and congratulated me because I had a breakthrough.
Boy,
wow.
You were gifted. The angels came down on your shoulders.
Yes, it totally broke the cycle of that sort of feeling in my life. And I've been, that's why I'm doing all the wonderful things I'm doing today, because it freed me. I broke the chain that self-imposed prison that I put myself in.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I also believe, too, Judith and Jim, that, and you tell me what you think about this, I have a philosophy that we were born to master what our parents never did.
Well, certainly, that is one way. I've not heard it that way, but I think that's certainly one way to look at why life is always challenging. We can all get into hissy fits about having to break through different learning obstacles. I'm speaking for myself. I have really not been a very good learner in my life. If I didn't learn it easily, boy, was I annoyed that I had to be challenged that hard. But if we look at it spiritually, if we look at it psychologically, yes, coming out of whatever family we were born into, there are bound to be challenges. And if we can, as you're saying, wrap our souls and hearts around those challenges and know that that is what we're here to do and that is what will inspire other people to do better,
mm-hmm.
then it will help us grow past how our parents were raised themselves and how they raised us.
And that actually improves the entire planet. Every time any person chooses to grow and work on themselves, everybody wins.
Oh, totally. I mean, an example from my life is that my dad was a very, very handsome and gifted musician. He was in some of the Gene Autry movies and did a lot of entertainment early in his life. But he got a record deal with Mercury Records in the country western field, a song he'd written that made it onto the country western pop chart.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit number one and ended up with $70 in his pocket from that hit because he had been screwed.
Right.
And he did not choose to sue them. He quit. He was so hurt. He was so unskilled psychologically. All he knew to do was just shut down and become bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so his mantra as I was growing up was, out in the world, you're going to get screwed and tattooed.
Oh,
and so,
geez.
So that's what I grew up in.
Yeah.
And I, even though I started modeling when I was 12, I won a beauty contest when I was 12.
And you're just a stunning lady, I must say.
Thank you very, very much. And I lived in L.A. at the time growing up, so I got right into television and, ended up on doing a lot of television series and so forth. But I always kept a distance from the business. I always stayed remote because in the back of my mind was, you're going to get screwed, you're going to get tattooed, don't want it too much, don't get too involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, there were so many opportunities that I walked away from, shut the door on, out of this fear that came from how I was raised. It was completely unconscious.
Right.
I didn't even know I was doing anything weird. It just
blind
seemed normal.
Spot. Yeah. So when you figured it out, what was that like?
Well, first I had to grieve.
Yes.
I had to really grieve that I had lost so many opportunities that clearly would have led to something quite large. once I came to terms with that, as you said, I really then respected that not going further in the acting world did then turn me towards psychology, and I became a PhD psychologist. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist in California. And that opened up the whole arena of this issue of the fear of being fabulous and the need to break through resistance, and opened up what it means to really commit yourself to your own essence, to your own resources, not from an egotistical way, but as an expression of the source.
Yes.
To really be willing to embody all that you've been given, so that Jim and I talk a lot about being fabulous, what mm-hmm. it means to give yourself totally to the gifts that you own, and mm-hmm. to put yourself out there, to go to your acting teacher and say, I'm terrified, I'm a clumsy oaf, I'm afraid I'm going to embarrass myself, but I want to give myself totally to this. Please push me. Please don't ever hesitate to not push me. I want to do this.
Right. That takes a lot of courage. I have a definition for courage that maybe is not in the Webster's Dictionary, but it just makes such perfect sense for me, a Katie-ism of mine. I believe that being fully self-expressed in the face of no agreement is what courage really is.
That's a wonderful way to say it.
Because that's
no
what,
agreement.
Yeah, that's what acting is.
Absolutely. And in terms of being courageous, two things, the reason one even has to think about being courageous is you are, like you say, you are out there in the face of no agreement, so
mm-hmm.
the environment is not supporting you, but
yes.
also there's an inner voice that's saying, like your mother said, you will never amount to anything. You have to be courageous and get beyond that, because when we break through those old injunctions, those old warnings, what we call those old forbiddances, then you will actually feel a bit like a traitor, if not a lot like a traitor.
Yeah, and that's where the grieving comes in.
Absolutely.
You really must grieve that.
You have to grieve it, and you have to go on, and you move on into whatever life you're going to have after the grieving. If you don't want to have that feeling of being a traitor to those old commitments of yours, then you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah, and I believe that what we take from this world, all we take from this world, is what we have learned.
Right.
And
that's really true.
Yes, and what we have learned is, it's like, I believe that every single moment is another classroom. Forget about every new day. I mean every new moment. I'm serious. I'm just like a little growth machine. And, I'm just fascinated by human nature and psychology, and I can't get enough of it, and I can't give enough of it. I'll tell you, if I may, a couple of things that I've got going on that is all culminating in my life, and it came because I metaphorically said to that acting teacher or creator or higher wisdom or higher power, whatever it is, I want to be so fully self-expressed and so authentically who I am, having been born a spiritual being, wide awake in a family that were atheists, was extremely painful, but wow, what a wonderful classroom for me to figure out who I am. And I had to hide my spirituality most of my life. And I just recently turned 50 in April, and rather than going through menopause, I'm having regenopause, which means I've gone from producing the egg to becoming the egg.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I'm telling you, I'm having the time of my life. I'm having the most wonderful, happy childhood at age 50 that anyone could ever want. And I've got great relationships with my family and my mother and all of these things. Yes, every now and then I lose my tolerance and patience for some things that I still have a little bit of an issue with from my childhood. But, I just let time go by and I work it out. I don't make wrong. I don't judge. I just simply am true to myself and I express my feelings, and they'll be heard however they're heard, but I must express them or else I'll die. What's the point if you can't tell your truth? And
right.
I say it kindly, I say it generously, I say it supportively, conscientiously, and always thinking of how it's going to land over
okay?
there.
What you just said is absolutely true of actors. If they don't express themselves, if they don't get into the moment, if they don't discover their authenticity vis-a-vis the character, then they will die. In other words, the scene dies. And
yes.
then the performance isn't compelling, the performance isn't engaging, and then they feel like they're dying.
Well, we call that phoning it in.
Yeah, phoning it in, right,
right,
sure.
Yeah, that's exactly
or,
right.
Or taping, you send in a tape.
Yeah, but some of the things that I'm working on with Guardian Angel Enterprises are I'm writing a book called The End of the Anonymous Actor, Changing Your Life Story Forever. What do you think of that title?
It's a good title, particularly for actors.
Yeah, Spirit gave it to me one morning on a Saturday. I get to sleep in this morning, and all of a sudden I'm hearing in my head, get up and write. And I'm like, no, it's Saturday, I'm sleeping in. It says, get up and write. And I said, no, it's Saturday, I'm sleeping in. And then this voice said, the end of the anonymous actor. And I went, that
would
be good. I think I'm going to get up and write. I could barely wait for my computer to boot up, and I'd written a whole treatment in 4 minutes and 36 seconds.
Wow.
And actually, Neil Donald Walsh of Conversations with God gave me the subtitle when I interviewed him for the book, and it's going to introduce to the entertainment industry in a quantum leap who our living luminaries are, which I call the rock stars of the spiritual world, like Eckhart Tolle, Neil Donald Walsh, James Redfield, Dan Millman, all of these people, and David Welch and Eckhart Tolle, John Rotz, and Jim Carrey are doing a film coming up based on The Power of Now. It won't be called The Power of Now, but Eckhart Tolle's work. And
you
I'm
Jim Carrey, the actor that we know as Jim Carrey?
Yes. He's a very, very incredibly spiritual man. As a matter of fact, he's the reason that I carry a $15 million check written to myself in my purse with the date of, I believe it's March 2008.
He carried that around for a while, didn't he?
He carried his $10 million one. I with inflation, I made mine 15. But I take it out and I visit with it every now and then. I believe in it. I give it energy. I have a manifestation basket almost as big as I am, filled to the brim with everything that I delight in and want for myself and want for my life. And you know, I get that when we're so committed and driven to be of service to the world and to others, that we really must apply everything we want for the world to ourselves first, and then it will naturally happen
well,
in the world.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, everything that you're talking about, I want to congratulate you on it. It's marvelous. And I want to give you an example of the invisible actor that has been with me, well, since being on Star Trek.
Mm.
And because it's Star Trek, people always love the story because the Trekkies just, you know, think it's terrific. But I was doing an under five part on Star Trek years ago as a nurse. And I got to wear that fabulous little costume, and oh, my God, I just looked terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Shatner and I had to get on an elevator together. And back then, he did not have a double. And so he and I stood together while they did the lighting to get that elevator door to work right and the lighting. We must have stood together for 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Joking, teasing, kidding around, having a good conversation. I was maybe no more than 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was laughing and laughing. And at one point, he yelled over to the director and he said, "She's funny. She's wonderful." And we went about the scene, and the day ended. The work was over. I went home. I was completely invisible. It didn't matter to me that Bill Shatner had yelled to the director on my behalf. It never crossed my mind to go at the end of the day to the director, shake his hand, personally introduce myself, and say, "I'm that gal that Bill Shatner thinks is so funny. Please make sure you bring me back.
And thank you so much."
Right.
Yes.
Never crossed my mind.
Wow. Well, you know, it's only 10% of the people, of actors, send a thank you card or do things like that,
right.
And I always encourage it. I was one of the 10%. I sent a thank you card for everything.
Right, exactly. And the anonymity that you're talking about vis-a-vis the actor that's anonymous, the actor that's anonymous on the street is the actor that's anonymous inside his or her own self.
Absolutely, and it's a journey to the self, and you're the one you've been looking for.
Absolutely.
No one else.
Anonymity, we used to work with some people, with some actors, a group of actors when we lived in L.A., and I used to say, you can't be a star until you're a star.
Inside
you cannot be a star until you're a star, and if you are never a star inside, you're never going to get to be a star outside.
Right.
And I know that for a fact.
Yeah,
so that anonymity that you're talking about is
mm-hmm.
very powerfully internal. And once you, for example, if you get a set of angels at a arm wrestling tournament that helped you break through, you begin to see some part of who you are.
Yes.
And like, for example, when I met Judith, she always commented in our early marriage about my power, and I used to dismiss her. And the reason I would dismiss her, because if I accepted the power that she was describing, I would go against the impotent person that I agreed to be vis-a-vis my father and all of that business.
Right.
So it all got worked out. But the anonymity exists within before anybody doesn't see you.
Yes. And also, when an actor isn't busy being visible, they're busy being invisible.
Exactly.
And truly, if people can understand that there's no such thing as rejection, except the rejection you do of yourself.
Yes.
Because when you go on an audition or you go on a date, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you are not selected for the role, if you are not selected for a second date, you've not been rejected. Simply, you are not in the preference category for that particular moment.
Right.
And you are not rejected unless you start slamming yourself with all kinds of negative head talk.
Yes.
Which we can, everybody's learned how to do it. But one of the things that Jim and I are committed to, and we even have a product called Overcoming Negative Head Talk that people are thrilled with because it really helps them break it up,
mm-hmm.
is to stop putting ourselves down, to stop rejecting ourselves.
Yes, and I also have to interject when you're talking, sorry about that, stalk your thoughts.
Just stop your thoughts?
Stop them, S-T-A-L-K, stalk your thoughts.
Right,
and
absolutely stalk your thoughts.
Yes, and don't let one word come out of your mouth that you would not be thrilled to have come back to you.
Right. And with respect to what Judith was just saying about rejection,
yes.
Here's a way to understand it. It's a little more, I understand about the feelings and you don't get the job and you don't get the role and there's a desire that's disappointed, and I understand all of that. But when, just think of it this way, when you go to the supermarket and you approach the ice cream refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
and you choose vanilla, you think, well, is it going to be vanilla or is it going to be strawberry? And you choose vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Have you rejected strawberry? Of course you haven't.
No.
You have simply chosen vanilla.
Yeah, perfect.
And if you go on an audition, and I'm saying this from auditions where I came back and beat myself to a pulp for being a failure, when in fact all that the director or the casting agent did was preferred somebody else for this particular moment, and if I had really understood that, that would have allowed me to go into the next audition as full as possible instead of carrying the rejection from the old audition with me.
Yes, and if people would just wrap their mind around the fact that just short of pulling out a gun and pretending you're going to shoot the casting director, they have no problem with you.
They don't.
No, it's all made up. And a lot of people go around thinking, too, that, people are thinking badly of them the minute they walk in the room. Well, that's just not true because people are so busy thinking about themselves, they're not thinking about you at all.
We call it the natural and innocent narcissistic preoccupation with your own life.
Oh, very well said.
Everybody's preoccupied with their own life. So I'm walking in the door, and for all I know, this casting director or this producer or the director of the show, whomever it is, it's got 50,000 things going on, and I happen to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that that person's entire being is focused on me. That's just
right.
A mistake. And when we attribute those kinds of false ideas to them. Now, if I've got some kind of, if I'm in some kind of conflict with, say, a casting director and I walk in, there might be some issue going on. But aside from that, they're just going about their work like you are. If you can keep that in mind, your auditions become a joy instead of a drag.
Right. Well, you know what they say. It's all about me. All about me, if they're not paying attention. It's all about me.
Right.
So I want to ask you, and thank you for sharing that. I just, I'm getting a buzz off this conversation. I don't know about you two, but I'm actually high from it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we live in a small town in upstate New York, and I produced and directed a couple of stage shows here.
Mm-hmm.
And when we converted a Methodist, a Protestant church, into a theater, and we created an entire circus tent. It was wonderful the way this theater was transformed. And I stood in there and I said, boy, I really do love this. I love actors. I have always loved actors. And because when an actor is really present, they're, for my money, the most alive people on the planet.
Yes. And available.
They're available.
And this conversation is really thrilling. I really hope that every actor, everyone who's listening, takes in what we are talking about, because it will transform your life and it will transform your career so that you can put yourself out there fully completely, robustly, fearlessly, and have a fabulous life.
Yes. Well, let me tell you what I've just, another thing that I've just started doing as a one-woman show who is doing everything she can to make it an influence on Hollywood and use Hollywood to expand consciousness in the world. I think it's the most marvelous communication tool. What I've started doing is I've partnered up with a certified hypnotherapist, a very gifted hypnotherapist named Alex Schief, and we have trademarked something which is very, very exciting, and we've been doing it with many clients and giving talks, and we've been asked to speak at more and more places all the time. Being a soul blueprint coach and a intuitive mediator, as well as a life coach and career coach, I've been in the entertainment industry for 24 years. I was an actress for 15 years. I was a talent agent and manager, so I've done many, many things. So I have a lot of experience there. And what I do is when I life coach and career coach, they're interchangeable because, as I mentioned, being life is holographic. You can't work on your career and not benefit in your personal life and vice versa. So what happens is Alex will hypnotize the client, and then I will go in with the client's permission and completely reconstruct their soul's blueprint, in that they have completely uploaded new programs and deleted the programs that were causing the behaviors and the things that they were attracting in their life that they didn't want, and just reprogramming new programs, and just like taking out old software and putting in new software. And it's so powerful. And we'll go to past lives to find out where the original wounding was that causes this feeling in this lifetime, because if you believe in reincarnation, this is the life you've been dying to live.
Listen, let me ask you a question with regard to past lives. To what degree does the person you are working with have to believe that there is such a thing as a past life?
They don't have to believe it at all, because I ask their permission to go forward with a topic that they're not certain about and ask them to listen with beginner's mind, and they do.
Uh-huh, okay.
And the results I get are fantastic, because, you know, saying to go back to a past life is really just a distraction to get them to go to what the real issue is.
Right, okay.
And the real issue is generally in this lifetime, but to ask them go to a past lifetime makes them feel safer to talk about the issue they've got in this lifetime.
Keep it at an arm's length.
And we call it quantum hypnotherapy. Do you like that?
Say it again?
We call it quantum hypnotherapy.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
we've trademarked
it. Pardon?
As far as your tracking, your results tracking goes, if you do that,
mm-hmm.
how long lasting is the effect? Because in a lot of instances that I've seen hypnotists work, that there is something that happens in the evening or for the couple of days, and then they go right back to where they used to be. So
oh, no, it doesn't happen with this. It does happen with hypnosis alone, but when we do it this way,
uh-huh.
It's done with spiritual psychology, and it just makes too darn much sense for them to go back again.
Okay.
You can't unring that bell. Enlightenment is not reversible.
Okay.
And it's extremely powerful.
Yeah, right.
And it happens instantaneously.
Well, that is extremely powerful, and I would love to witness that.
I would love to offer it to you and Judith if you would like to ever try it.
Okay.
We'd love to.
Yes. As far as the fear, that would cure the fear of being fabulous, like, right quick.
Well, indeed. Kate, does it happen? Can you do it over the phone?
We're working on that. That's our next step.
Okay. All right.
And I'm sensing a collaboration here.
Yeah, you are.
I truly am. Oh, I've got goosebumps.
We'll definitely make a plan to talk with you later.
I would love that. So I want to ask you a question. As we're approaching the end of the hour, I want to make sure that we get this question out. I'm sure our listeners are wondering. What can our listeners do to identify their own fear of being fabulous?
They have to watch for patterns I'll use my own term, and then Judith can use other language. Patterns of collapse. When you are moving forward and everything seems to be going very, very well, and suddenly there's a turn or a move and you start to go down, and I don't mean just go down for a moment like you have a bad day, but things start to go south. Generally speaking, unless the person is in such a psychological state that they are seriously psychologically disturbed, we put that crew aside.
Mm-hmm.
When they see there is a pattern of collapse, moving forward and not completing, that is definitely the fear of being fabulous. And when that happens, that is a clue. If you really look at all of the elements, your thoughts inside, what's going on outside, the circumstances, the choices you make, you will discover why it is that you cannot go forward. So watch out for collapse.
Yes.
And also, there are all kinds of specific behaviors that you can watch for. Anxiety that holds you back from giving a good performance, that makes you late for an audition or anything. Anytime you are showing up late, you can count on that there's some fear of being fabulous right there.
That's sabotage. I've actually had actors say to me when I'm sending them for a series regular reading, my blow dryer is broken, I can't go.
Exactly.
Yes.
But to me, the word I use, that's also a collapse.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small collapse, perhaps. It's not a Brown Derby collapse, but it's a collapse.
I like that.
And anytime you have a fantasy that you're not going to have to effort to get ahead, that you just hope that you're plucked out of a crowd and somebody's going to discover you, any kind of fantastic redemption idea, you can count on that you are afraid of being truly fabulous. You're not willing to be fabulous. You can't allow yourself to be really fabulous. Somebody else has to find you and rescue you.
And Judith used the word redemption. We can use that word in a classical religious sense, that somebody redeems you from your faults. But the problem is you can't redeem yourself, because redemption doesn't occur in that context from inside. It has to come from the outside. So if you're busy looking around for somebody to come in and make life for you, sort of like the financial metaphor is you hit the lotto, you don't have to do anything for it. It comes from the outside and changes your life completely. That's the fear of being fabulous.
And that's a fantasy. Now, what you just triggered in me is a wonderful, wonderful inspired thought that I'm going to share, because that's what I like to do. I trust myself completely, and I think Spirit wants me to say this. What I'm hearing is when people take a mirror, a hand mirror, and they face it out towards the world in order to see themselves, then they're putting their greatness in the hands of everyone else's opinion.
Correct.
Totally.
Correct.
And also, if you can't allow the world to love you because you don't love yourself, then you might as well choose another career.
Yeah, oh, totally.
But I would turn that around, and I would say it's not if I can't allow the world to love me. If I can't allow me to love me,
yes,
then the world cannot love me, because I won't give it permission.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I meant. And so what I really love to do as a talent manager, it's an opportunity for me to be a mentor.
Yes.
I'm driven
right.
to give what I never got. And I've never been happier in my life contributing to others and being of service to others. And anytime you're being of service, I don't care what job you have, all of your physical needs are provided for, absolutely, with no exception. The universe shows up to give you exactly what you need when you are giving exactly what the world needs.
And Kate, I want to support that by also saying that please do not be an actor and just go about it la la la. Make sure it is a business. Make sure that you are responsible for yourself as a professional. That way you will help keep yourself on track and be responsible for watching all those symptoms of when you are holding back or cheating yourself. Then you can do something about it. I just want to reinforce that one of the sites that Kate gave for us is fearofbeingfabulous.com, and there are free tips there to help you get more on board with being in charge of yourself. That they are free, they are very illuminating, and they will help you enormously.
You know, and Kate, actors, and I'll speak for myself, when I was a very young actor, the thrill of being an actor was actually being emotionally alive inside the scene.
Yes.
That was the thrill of it all. Of course, the audience's response was also thrilling, but for me, it was being alive inside the scene.
Yeah,
but
the words just sit on top of the emotions.
But as Judith just said, I had no idea about being a professional.
Right.
I had no idea that it was a business.
Yes.
And that it was my business, and it was my business to learn my business.
Yes, it's Jim Incorporated.
Yeah, precisely, Jim Incorporated.
Joe's
and as
business.
A result, we really, really urge actors, particularly the younger ones, to really understand that it is a business. It is not crass. It is, you know, if you're going out to do a commercial for dog food, go do the best dog food commercial you can, because it's also a business. And what you have to demonstrate to those who are going to hire you is that you know it's a business, because otherwise they cannot trust you if all you are is an emotional machine, because that's too volatile.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of money being spent on those sets. So with that in mind, I would like to just say to everybody listening again that we've had the most wonderful pleasure and privilege to have with us Judith Shervin, PhD, and Jim Snikowski. I will forever think of you as Snickers now. and their websites, once again, is judithandjim.com and fearofbeingfabulous.com. Seek these two wonderful beings out. Really, really pay attention to what they're saying and what they're doing. Become involved with their cause, and which is to make the world a fabulous world. And just keep loving yourselves, keep trusting yourselves, keep believing in yourselves, and really stalk your thoughts and make sure that the thoughts you choose are good ones, because they are things and they do direct your life. And I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I've had the best time in this conversation, Judith and Jim, and I'm so, so pleased that you both could join us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, and I look forward to speaking with you both again regarding what we were talking about with hypnotherapy. And our next week's guest, I don't know if you two know her, her name's Charlotte Castle, and
sure.
She wrote If the Buddha Dated.
That's right, we know Charlotte.
If the Buddha Dated, If the Buddha Married, If the Buddha Were in Love, and If the Buddha Got Stuck. Wow, what an amazing, amazing, another light worker on the level of the two of you. And absolutely, read one of her books, and you will be forever transformed, the same as if you were to read something from Judith and Jim. I'm just so pleased to get to meet all these wonderful light workers and way showers, and I appreciate it so much. This is Kate Romero with Spiritual Hollywood. I want to thank BBS Radio, Doug, and Don Newsom, and I would like to let you know that I'm looking forward to being with you again next week. My website is www.guardianangelmanagement.com, all spelled out, no spaces, and I thank you so much for joining us, and you guys have a fabulous evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.